Chapter 24. Amanda. Amanda swiped her MTA card at the turnstile in Christopher Street subway station and made for the platform. As she turned the corner, she glanced over her shoulder. There were a few people behind her, a mother and teenage daughter, an elderly man with a cane, and a man who jogged through the entrance looking around. He was 30 feet away at least. She estimated he was over 6 feet tall, and he looked well-built. Sandy brown hair. His head turned from side to side and stopped when he saw Amanda. Then he moved towards her quickly. Amanda gritted her teeth against the protests from her knee and moved down the stairs quickly to the platform. A train was just pulling in. She could hear the screech of brakes and then the doors rolling open. Amanda reached the platform, moved swiftly onto the train, and made for the back of the carriage. There were a handful of people seated already. She dared not look behind her. The warning signal sounded, and within a few seconds, the door closed. The train started to move just as the man reached the platform. Amanda ducked down in her seat, making herself small, but never letting the man from her sight. She didn't recognize him, yet she was sure he was the same man who'd been in the black Escalade outside Quinn's house. The same Escalade that had parked behind her car, and the same man who got out of that car and followed her. She had no idea who he might be. A cop? Personal security for Quinn? It didn't matter. She wasn't going back for her car anytime soon. She looked around the carriage and noticed some of the people there were giving her attention. Their stares quickly shifted as she met each gaze. It was then she realized she was panting, out of breath. But more than that, she touched her face. Her hand came away wet. There were spots of drying blood on her cheek. She wiped them away with spit. Amanda leaned back in the seat, biting down as she stretched out her injured knee. By the time the train rolled into Times Square, her breathing hadn't eased. She was jacked up on adrenaline, and this wasn't going to pass anytime soon. Not wanting to draw attention, she changed trains, got on the number 7 to Grand Central. It was a good place to lose herself. At Grand Central, she got off the train, went up the escalator and into the main concourse. The warm marble halls always reminded her of Christmas time, the painted stars above her head, the vast glistening chandeliers, the solid brass four-faced clock that sits atop the center of the information booth. There were people around the booth waiting, checking their cell phones. Every New Yorker knew the clock. The phrase, "meet you at the clock," only ever meant this one. Ahead was the escalator to the MetLife building and 45th Street beyond. She stood on the right, gazed up as she ascended. A couple got on the escalator to her right, coming down onto the concourse. They were about her age, a man and a woman. The woman had soft chestnut hair and wide, fearful eyes. Those eyes were so round, so watchful, that they reminded her of the opal faces of the clock she'd just passed. She had linked arms with her partner. As they passed each other on the escalator, Amanda glanced at the woman. She stared back, and then both women quickly looked away. In that half a second, Amanda knew comfort. Here was someone else, just as afraid and uncertain. The angst and trepidation poured from her eyes. And in that moment, when their gaze had met, Amanda didn't feel alone. In a city of 8.5 million, loneliness is common. Most people were alone. Alone as they traveled through the belly of the city in packed subway cars. Alone as they weaved through the brick and steel canyons of Manhattan on sidewalks thick with strangers. Alone as they lay in bed at night with their problems and their pain. Just then, Amanda knew the companionship found in the fear and loneliness of others. She reached the top of the escalator, paused, turned and watched to see if the man from the Escalade was following her. She waited for a minute, no sign of him. Making her way through the lobby of the MetLife building and then into the cold night air on 45th Street, Amanda's shoulders dropped, the tension easing down a notch. She took out her cell phone, called Naomi. No answer. She didn't want to leave a message either. Maybe it was better that they didn't talk tonight. She just wanted to get home. And she knew when she got into the apartment and closed the door, the weight of what she'd done tonight would hit her like a freight train. It was 2:30 in the morning when Amanda got back to her apartment. She threw her keys on the kitchen table and went immediately to the bathroom. She vomited once, and her body wanted more, but there was nothing left in her stomach. Her throat raw, a vile taste in her mouth. Amanda ran hot water into the tub, stripped her clothes off, and put them in a trash bag along with her coat. She hadn't looked too closely, but she guessed there would be blood spatter on them. Definitely the gloves. Those clothes would need to find their way into a random dumpster later that day. She managed to lever herself into the water, mostly using her arms. It was hot, much hotter than was comfortable, but her skin would soon get used to it. She needed the heat. Her knee looked like a football. There was a cut across it that stung like hell, but it wasn't deep and had already closed. It didn't look bad compared to the purple and black bruising forming over the kneecap. Amanda kneaded the muscles and tendons in her knee, and then her shin, which had begun to ache because she was dragging that leg. Her neck was still red, tender, and she knew there would be some livid bruising on it tomorrow. She could cover that with thick foundation. It had all gone to shit last night, and she knew she was lucky to be alive. That phrase formed in her mind. You're lucky to be alive. It wasn't her conscious mind speaking. This was her internal thought process, which couldn't really be categorized as conscious or unconscious, because when that thought occurred, she found it to be true, to her great surprise. I am lucky to be alive. Just a few days ago, Amanda had no strong feelings on being alive at all. If she was breathing, then it was with the sole intent to make Wallace Crone stop breathing. Now he was dead, and another monster was dead too. She knew it was the right thing to have done, on some level. Amanda was coming around to the view that what was legal and what was right were often two different things. Her father had been a union organizer and a civil rights protester. This meant he had an arrest record longer than a Jersey longshoreman with a drinking problem. And he was proud of it, too. She'd watched him being hauled off picket lines and protest marches by the NYPD more than enough times. What would he have to say about what she'd just done? Amanda knew the answer. He would say she'd made a terrible mistake, and that, yes, she'd been forced to defend herself against a killer, but Amanda knew she should never have climbed that wall, should never have gotten herself into that situation where she'd had to fight for her life. She thought of bathing Jess in this same bathtub, filling it with suds, listening to her squeals of delight as she splashed and played with her little yellow boat that sat still and unused now on the windowsill. Amanda slid down and let her head go under the water. It was quiet beneath the surface and warm, the opposite of being thrown into an icy sea at the end of her recurring dream. For Amanda, being beneath the water was like going into a different world, or seeing the old one through a different lens, a view altered and soothed by calm, swirling water. She came back up for air, stretched out her knee, which was beginning to feel a little better. With her arms on the sides of the tub and a towel behind her head, Amanda allowed herself to drift off to sleep. When she next opened her eyes, the sun was threatening the sky with an angry red haze, and the water in the tub was almost cold. She had not dreamed of being in that boat on that roaring black sea, so far away from the fire on the beach. Today was Wednesday, Thanksgiving Eve. This time last year, she was already up, prepping the food for the next day, making potato salad and corn fritters. She wouldn't be doing any of that today. She hadn't even bought a turkey for tomorrow. The thought of it made her feel sick. She stood, took out the bath plug, and turned on the shower to get the heat back into her body. She found bandages and surgical tape in the medicine cabinet and strapped up her knee. It wasn't as sore as it had been last night, and the strapping helped stabilize it. Last thing she needed was a trip to the emergency room after falling down a set of stairs because her knee had given way. Her stomach felt better, too. She was hungry. She dressed in blue jeans and a black turtleneck sweater to hide the bruising, then made her way to the deli on the corner of 96th Street. She'd become quite fond of their breakfast wraps, and the coffee was always good. She took her meal outside and found an empty table under the awning. Amanda sat down and began to eat her roll. She tried Naomi's cell phone. It went straight to voicemail. Glancing behind her at the Miller time sign, she saw it was 7:09. Maybe Naomi wasn't up yet. There was no reason for Amanda to be here now, other than breakfast sandwiches and hot coffee, and the realization of this gave her a sensation of warmth. Suddenly, a little bit of life was slowly returning to her. She was feeling something other than pain, loneliness, and rage. There was life out there, after all. She finished her roll, screwed up the wrapper, and glanced around, looking for a trash can. Her gaze flashed over the 96th Street subway entrance, and something in the back of her mind registered an alarm. She focused on the subway entrance, looked around, and there he was, wearing his overcoat, backpack, AirPods, walking into the station like he did 6 days a week. No, it couldn't be him. At first, Amanda couldn't process the image across the street. She got up from her table, spilling the coffee, leaving the wrapper to the winds. She didn't look left to cross the street, and only an angry car horn saved her from being hit. She stepped back, let the car pass, then jogged across. As her legs began to pick up speed, pain stabbed at her knee, but she ignored it, pushed on. She swiped her MTA card at the turnstile, swung left for downtown in Brooklyn, the number one, number two, and number three trains, gripping the rail, sliding her hands down it to ease her knee as she hobbled deeper, down one flight, then the next. As she reached the platform, she heard the familiar swish of train doors closing. Amanda stumbled on the last three stairs, bit her lip to mask the jolt it gave her knee, but managed to stay upright. She needed a closer look. She needed to know. Maybe this was a mistake. She'd only seen him from a distance. One good look was all she needed. Amanda knew this man's face better than she could remember the face of her little girl. There was no one on the platform. Through the train window, she saw him sitting down in the train car, facing the platform, his cell phone in his hand. Amanda approached the window just as the train began to pull away. Wallace Crone's head lifted, and he stared at her, only for a second. The train was moving, but it was all the time she needed. Crone was alive. Naomi lied.